Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
I'm doing well, too.
Good. Woo-hoo.
Hey, you know what?
What?
We have been getting some really great reviews on iTunes.
We have.
Can you believe it?
No.
Oh, I can. I think we're pretty cool. It's just taking a while for people to catch up and think we're cool, too. Anyway, here, I'm going to read some names off. They've been really great.
Let's hear it.
Chaplain Teens. She left us a really nice review.
Aww.
So nice.
Thanks.
There's Hair CC, which she said, and if she can give us a call, let us know, text us.
Give us a call.
Just call us right now.
1-800-555.
Yeah. She said that she's having problems with soft sounds and loud sounds that it's going. So we're not really sure what that is, if it's the way that we speak, if we need to be more monotoned, or if it's actually something with sound quality. We don't know. Let us know by email at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com.
There you go.
We would love to hear exactly what's wrong we can try to fix it.
We're pretty not smart.
Yeah. And there's Modern Mind Old Soul. Mm-hmm. Left us a great one.
Mm-hmm.
Two Girls Gee. Mm-hmm. Like the karate suit. Nice. Mon Kel 75.
Mm-hmm.
Snow Penny. Sorry. You sound like Gibby from Trick Ticket.
Bennett.
Bethy 49. Mama Jen 577. And no, that's not mine.
Nope.
Mine is Build Me Up Buttercup. It's one of my favorite songs. It makes me so happy.
Baby, just don't let me down.
And most me around and the most of all.
Most
or worst
of all.
Whatever. And Batgirl 64 is the last one we have. So everybody, these totally make our life at this point. So please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you can leave a review. It's totally cool, and we get so happy.
It really does. You're having a little down, thinking, what's it all for?
No.
And it just makes me happy. It does.
So and
thank you.
Not only leave one for us, but for all your other favorite podcasts.
Yes.
And if you're going to leave one review, if you don't like us or if you don't like other podcasts, just go. Just
move it on down the line.
Move it on. There's no need to be mean.
Constructive criticism.
Constructive criticism is awesome, and we welcome that.
But Hair CC.
Yeah.
We
want to know what's on.
Exactly.
Lord knows we've had problems with audio in the past. But if it's the way we speak, we tend to not be monotone. We're very excitable. We do the SNL. Hi, how you doing? I do like rice. Just let us know what's going on.
It's true.
We'd love to hear it. So constructive criticism, yes. Just being plain mean and stupid, no. We'll make fun of you. All right, I am off my soapbox.
Thank you. I'll wait till you get off the box. Here, let me give you a hand. There you go. Did you fall?
I fell.
Of course you did.
That's par for the course.
These damn flats,
they're too high. But anyway, you got something for us this week?
I do. I'm going to try to stay calm here. St. Lucie County is a community located about 90 miles north of Miami, and it is just what you would expect in sunny Florida. Hot, humid,
and crazy.
The area is heavy on wildlife, as lots of swampy canals are all over, and they dump into the famed Florida Everglades, which I know you've been to and did the little airboat ride, and I haven't, and I'm still jealous.
Well, my stepdad and mom used to live down there, so we would go
all the time. I think that would be so fun.
And he would have a boat on the canal, and you'd have to get out before you got into the ocean, and they'd have a crane that picks up the boat.
For a killer, there is no better place to dump a body, because if the Florida weather doesn't help decay the body fast, the critters will get to it, and within a short amount of time, there'll be nothing left. No evidence that a crime was ever committed, or at least that is what is hoped for. But one July evening, fate was not on this killer's side. It is mid-July when a man and his niece are out fishing on the banks of a canal. They discover a headless, handless torso floating near the shores of the mucky Everglades. By the time the police get to the scene, the sun is setting and making it difficult to see. But what they can tell is that a violent crime had been committed. There were a few signs that indicated something rather peculiar with this crime situation. The body was believed to be female, but with no head, they couldn't be sure. Her hands had been removed as well. Her clothes were fully intact, minus one sandal that was missing from her foot. There was a wound to her stomach, but at the time, they could not be sure what caused this injury. Detectives investigate around the body, but have no luck in finding anything else. And with no identification, they're not sure who this is, but they are betting that a killer was hoping the alligators would take care of the body. As the investigators are trying to put together just what happened, an officer notices the stomach wound and that it appeared that something was cut out, such as maybe a tattoo, thinking it would identify the body because the killer didn't want this person to be discovered.
Just like the Black Dahlia.
Obviously. The murderer, however, missed a few things. The body was wearing jeans, and the jeans hid a yellow rose tattoo on her ankle. And that decapitation wasn't as clean as the killer thought. There were a few teeth left, making it possible to identify the missing person. I know. Is that so disgusting?
The mouth? They didn't get the neck?
I guess probably this way? The jaw? This, you know, cut up? I don't know. I was thinking the same thing. How do you get teeth left in there?
I would think that maybe they got, like, the mouth down like a clean neck cut.
Oh, God,
that poor thing.
Police would soon hold a press conference to make a plea to the public to help them identify this person. Steve and Beverly McGowan were siblings who had moved to Florida from Philly about 10 years prior. Beverly was the youngest of three. She had an older sister as well. Steve and Beverly were very close and always kept up with each other, often checking in to see what the other one had going on in their life. Beverly McGowan was a loan processor at the Glendale Bank. She was not married, but she had lots of friends, and she had just made a major purchase. This had to be exciting. Beverly had bought a two-bedroom condo near her brother in Pompano Beach. Since Beverly wanted a place of her own so badly, she worked a part-time job as well as her full-time job. But unfortunately, it still wasn't enough to cut it. She needed a roommate. And well, we all know how awful roommates can be. Some of the roommates were not the best, as often is the case, but she was making her dream of being a homeowner a reality and doing what she needed to do. In July of 1990, Beverly placed an ad looking for a roommate in the Sun Sentinel paper. Within just a few days, she had met a woman named Alice, who was from England. Alice worked for IBM and was over here on a temporary working assignment. Beverly was thrilled with Alice and thought this was going to work out just great. The day of July 17th would be the last day Beverly would report to work. And on the evening of July 17th, Beverly reached out and spoke to a friend of hers. July 18th, Beverly McGowan calls in sick to work, and that would be the last time anyone would hear from her. Immediately after this happened, Steve and his older sister received a letter in the mail. It was from Beverly. It was handwritten, and Beverly explained she was not happy, and she had decided to leave it all behind and live the life she had always wanted to live. This meant leaving her job, her new condo, as well as her family and friends. The letter was postmarked July 16th. Steve immediately knows this is out of character for his sister, so he decided to go to her condo and find out what was going on, see if he could find anything over there. After knocking on the door, Beverly doesn't answer, so he has a spare key and lets himself in. What he finds in the house is shockingly normal. All her clothes were in the closet, and if someone decided to up and leave, wouldn't they need clothes? But there are a few things missing. Her two cats, her answering machine, and her car. Steve calls the bank to see if Beverly had been showing up to work. The manager informs him that she had called in sick, but that was not all. It seemed Beverly called in to tell the bank not only would she not be reporting back to work, but to go ahead and foreclose on the condo.
Oh, no.
Steve knows there is something not right with this scenario. and he immediately calls police to file a missing persons report. Not long after he filed the report, during the press conference that the police were having, that I mentioned earlier, Steve would receive a phone call from a friend telling him to turn on the TV. Steve turned on the TV, and he knew right away. During the press conference, the police revealed the victim had a yellow rose tattoo on her ankle. There was no mistaking it. The victim was his beloved 34-year-old sister, Beverly McGowan. It had been 3 days since she was missing. Steve went to the police station to talk to authorities, and while he was there, police asked him if Beverly, by chance, had a tattoo on her stomach. Steve says, yes, she did. It was the bunny Thumper from Bambi. This was the portion of her skin that was cut out. Mm. Steve brought the letters to the station to show police. Police wanted to know if anyone would want to hurt Beverly. Steve said no, but that she had had some terrible roommates in the past. Steve also mentioned that recently she had received an obscene phone call. So now police are wondering, perhaps she had a stalker. Authorities reach out to friends and soon learn that there was a man by the name of Mike, a local artist who would often go and hang out with Beverly. Police decide to pay Mike a visit, and they soon learn a little bit of information. Mike states that he had last spoke to Beverly 2 days before she went missing. Mike had called her and asked her to dinner that evening, but Beverly told him that she couldn't go because a potential new roommate named Alice was coming over that evening for a get-to-know-you kind of thing. And Mike said that Beverly was very excited about meeting this British woman named Alice. 4 days after Beverly's body was found, the medical examiner returns the findings. The ME said that because her head is missing, he cannot say conclusively what caused her death, but he is certain that her throat being slit
had something to do with
to her death. Thank you.
Wow, I could be an ME.
Right?
I know.
Lent to her death? Really?
Yeah. Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Thank you.
Can't put a Band-Aid on it.
That's why I left that in there, because I was like, what? I laughed. I thought that was funny. There was no sign of sexual assault and no DNA left behind either. Due to the heinous nature, police are thinking that more than one person did this. Police need to find Alice, as they have a few questions for her. But before they can do that, a tip comes in. Beverly's car is discovered near the Miami airport and had been there for over 3 days. It was wiped completely clean. So police know that this is just not a random killing.
Exactly.
But someone that has most likely done this before. As police check into Beverly's financials, they make a startling find. Her credit card has been used at a North Miami mall and used after her body was found. It has now become clear that maybe Beverly was killed so that someone could assume her identity. Police go to visit the store clerk to see what she had to say. On a hunch, one of the police officers think that they know who this individual is and they know her identity. During this time, there was a huge news story, and I would think most people are familiar with it, and that was the Lorianza Lori Bembenek, better known as Bambi Bembenek. She was the one that was charged with and did time killing another police woman. Right? Mm-hmm. That was having an affair with her husband, I believe.
Run, Bambi, run.
During this time, she was on the run, and they thought this was probably her. So officials begin to circulate that news, and everybody goes on the lookout. They're trying to find her while she's out there. Now, while the detectives continue the search, they make yet another startling find. Approximately a year prior, a woman whose name is Lucinda McLean was found floating in a canal near Sarasota. McLean was shot, stabbed, and her head and hands were cut off as well. As much as the officers tried, these two cases could not be connected, but that wasn't all.
But she was floating in the canal.
Yes.
She wasn't like half in.
They were informed that Bembenek and her boyfriend had actually fled to Canada, not south to Florida. So that person in the mall that used the credit card was in fact not Lori Bembenek. Another hit came in that a woman using Beverly McCowan's ID and credit card to purchase a British Airways flight from Miami to London Heathrow was just given to the police. Police checked the flight manifesto, and there is not anyone named Beverly McGowan on the flight. Not long after landing in London, an attractive brunette goes to pick up her rental car, and uses McGowan's card. She had reserved the car under McGowan's name. Mm-hmm. The car had been rented a few days prior, but since that time, Steve,
the brother,
Beverly's brother, had canceled the cards, not aware of what was going on with his sister.
Good for him, as he should.
That's bad, though. Why is it bad?
Well, they could track it, but...
Yep, and he's very upset about that.
Well, he didn't know. I would have done it, too.
He would immediately do that,
especially
right?
if...
You'd think your sister just went crazy and that she's going to go spend all her money or whatever, you know, because she's foreclosed on the condo. The car agent informs the woman that, unfortunately, the card that she'd used earlier has been blocked. The woman hurriedly gets out some cash and pays for it and takes off. The woman was described as a man dressed as a woman. So now we're wondering, is there really two people using Beverly McCowan's cards? Or...
she just ugly.
Or it's a disguise. Like, it's... They don't know. Police were not sure yet. But the search for the woman has now become an international woman hunt. I guess you would say that instead of man hunt, right?
Person hunt.
Person hunt. And with the cancellation of the cards.
Non-gender hunt.
The trail would end right there at the car rental desk.
The trail went cold.
Officers arrive and inform the car rental place what the situation is with the strange woman.
Or man.
Who they are desperately trying to locate. So when the woman they are looking for calls in, they want to keep her on the line. Mm-hmm. The agent answers. There's so many missed connections in this. It's crazy. The police tell the agent, just keep her on the line. Keep her going. Try to get some information from her. The agent asks, where are you? And the woman on the other end of the line asks a man named Sam. Hey, Sam, where are we? So this is starting to confirm the idea that there might be two people there. Or maybe that was, she knew she liked her game, let me tell you. Officers are hopeful that they will soon catch up with the mystery lady and her friend. But that hope soon runs out as the car that they had rented is located outside another car rental place and is wiped clean. So they tried to get
right to
the... Okay. Time passes on and the case is at a standstill. It's 8 months later. Investigators decide to bring on a new investigator who can maybe look at it with a fresh set of eyes. The investigator is from the St. Lucie State's Attorney's Office, and her name is Nora Pfeiffer. Even though it will take years to do it, Nora Pfeiffer is ready and willing. She would be the one person who would never give up on this case. As Pfeiffer is working on the case, she begins to examine the passenger list of that plane flight and look into each and every person. You'd think, okay, what's that going to take? A couple days? No. 4 years pass.
No.
And they make a discovery. A passenger on the plane named Sylvia Ann Hutchinson had a little problem, or maybe a big problem. She had died years ago. So there's no way that that person could be on that plane flight with that name. Authorities run her name through a system, and sure enough, they get a hit. Sylvia had an arrest record with the Miami PD 5 years prior. But that's not it. Her name was also involved in yet another identity theft case from May of 1991, and this case was centered around a woman named Charlotte Cowan. Here we go. This all started in North Miami when a patrol officer pulls over a car. When the officer asked to see ID, this is legit, you can't make this up, he was presented with three different IDs.
Oh,
they
good.
Were Sylvia Hutchinson.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a new one. Elaine Parent. And Charlotte Cowan. The officer had pulled her over when he noticed that the tags on the car seemed a little off, a little fake, a little, you know, faked.
Correct. Yeah.
The officer took her into custody and she was released the following morning only to disappear.
Well, of course. She's slippery.
A little side note. Subsequent investigations after this showed that she next surfaced in New Mexico. She was running a restaurant. A year later, she was back in Florida, claiming to be South African and was penniless. There was some rumors or whatever flying around that she was hanging out in a homeless shelter.
Charlotte was?
Charlotte,
Alice.
Sylvia, Alice.
Well, but she was homeless as Charlotte.
You know, I don't know.
Just curious.
In 1992, even as the Florida police were looking for her in connection with Beverly's murder, Elaine Parent, under another identity, filed a civil negligence suit against the state of Florida after she slipped and injured herself in a restaurant. She won.
Oh, good.
but the police would never confirm how much money was awarded to her in damages. 1994, she disappeared altogether.
After.
For now.
Right.
So let's go back to Charlotte Cowan. Mm-hmm.
So we have Alice with Beverly, then Sylvia, Charlotte, and Elaine. Yep. And now we're going to go back.
We're going to go back to Charlotte. Because okay. Charlotte is going to kind of provide.
Now, Elaine was before Charlotte, though, correct?
That was one of the three IDs that she pulled over. Gotcha. That's why they reached police reach out to Charlotte, because she was after this was one of the three IDs. So police reach out to Charlotte Cowan, and she has quite a story for them.
Oh, so she's still alive.
Yes, exactly. And then, skin of her teeth, let me tell you. It seems that Charlotte Cowan received a letter in the mail telling her that she had a summons to appear in court. It seemed that Cowan had failed to return her rental car, and when she did, it was late. It was also missing its original car tags that had been swapped out with another tag that did not belong to that car, hence the car that was pulled over with the goofy tags. Cowan was being charged with petty theft for that incident. The only problem was that Cowan claimed that she had never rented a car or swapped tags on an auto.
Oh, nice.
Ever. Furious, Charlotte Cowan reports to the court to maintain her innocence, kind of throw a fit about all of this. And she actually didn't even need to get too far with the judge, because the officer that had pulled over the, quote, Charlotte Cowan, Elaine Parent person that night,
person
stood up and said, "That is not the same woman I pulled over." So then Cowan, thinking on a hunch, said, "Can I ask you, did that woman have red hair?" And the officer says, "Why, yep, she sure did." Charlotte Cowan knows exactly who the woman is, and it's a doozy. So Charlotte begins to tell officers the story. She says one night she was in a bar, just having a drink, when this tall, gorgeous redhead walked over to her. Cowan says she was immediately smitten and shocked that this beautiful lady would bring her a drink and ask to join her. The lady tells Cowan in her British accent that her name is Anne Tremont. The two immediately hit it off and continue chatting for a while until Tremont asks Cowan if she's into numerology. She goes on to say she's a numerologist and she's really big into it, and she can tell you everything about your future. Charlotte, intrigued, goes with it. Tremont says she just needs a few things, like your phone number, your birth date, your social security number.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those are all numbers. They are right. She is a numerologist, the collector.
Right when this was all taking place, a man enters the bar, and Anne tells Charlotte that that's her brother and that she needed to leave. She stood up and left. So the two women actually went on a few dates, and Charlotte Cowan said that she met Anne's brother. Nice guy, nice lady. But, you know, it didn't go too much farther, and so they ended up going their separate ways and really didn't see each other or talk again after that. Until a strange visit to Charlotte Cowan's house several months later. So Anne shows up. She has a wig on. She's panicked. She's going on and on about her family being after her. She says that she needs a new identity. Her family is relentless, and they'll never give up. And the only way she can do this is to get a birth certificate and assume somebody else's identity. So she starts begging Charlotte for her birth certificate.
No, and she did. Oh,
Charlotte.
Oh, Lord.
She started saying no at first, but Anne would not give up. And she honestly just wanted to get rid of her. So she gave her her birth certificate.
No, there's other ways to get rid of her.
Thank you.
Jeez.
Gave her her birth certificate. A few weeks later, a note arrived in the mail for Charlotte, and inside was her birth certificate.
Well, of course,
so she did get it back.
But you don't need it any longer once you get all the IDs.
Exactly. Hence the all that other stuff.
I would never even give you
the tags,
my
all that stuff,
my gift certificate. I wouldn't give you a gift certificate either, but I wouldn't give you my birth certificate either.
While the charges were dropped in the Charlotte Cowan case, Nora Pfeiffer, that's the investigator, pulls the file to take a closer look at it. A name immediately jumps out at her. In the Cowan file, Anne Tremont had yet another alias that went by, Sylvia Hodgkinson. So Anne Tremont, the redhead who stole Charlotte Cowan's identity, is the same person as Sylvia Hodgkinson.
Not the dead one.
Who stole Beverly McCowan's identity. So now they're starting to see, could Beverly's potential new roommate, Alice, be the same person as Charlotte, Anne, and Sylvia?
I'm guessing it is.
State Department dives in, takes a closer look. They soon learn that Sylvia Hodgkinson is also known as Alex Hart, Charlotte Dark, Brett Tremont, Anne Tremont, Elaine Haviland, Victoria Dark, Sue Hodgkinson, and many, many others. But there's one name that keeps coming up with all of this, and it ends up being her true name, and it is Elaine Antoinette Parent, a 54-year-old Bronx native. Parent had been arrested in the mid-1970s for shoplifting. During that arrest, she just so happened to be fingerprinted. They compared those fingerprints that were taken from that shoplifting arrest to the person that was using Charlotte Cowan's name, who was arrested with the faulty car tags. And they, in fact, match. They are the same person, Elaine Parent. It's now been 6 years since Beverly McCowan was murdered. Police now have a name and a face, but they needed to find her and reach out. But, in fact, she would be the one to beat them to the punch and make the first contact.
Ooh.
In 1998, a postcard came into the sheriff's department. It was signed, "Best Wishes, Your Chameleon." On the card was a self-portrait painting of herself that she had sent to police. She had aged it even, her look older than she was. It looked terrible. It looked like it was done by a third grader. But
some people aren't artistically inclined. Right.
The nickname was apt, as she stole the identities of her victims and was found to have used Beverly's credit cards after she killed her. She also scoured graveyards for names and dates of birth and stole the information of these potential people. Police are trying to come up with some things that they missed. They're trying to maybe discover something that they maybe overlooked. So they decided to go back and take another look at those letters that Beverly had written to her brother and sister, and they did an electrostatic document analysis. This is the same test that we talked about with the Debbie Smith case. The test looks for other imprints of letters or notes that were left behind prior to that one. So it's raised above, right?
Mm-hmm.
The test revealed that there was a note written by what was presumably Elaine Parent, and it was a note to a woman or lover in London, and it was very threatening in nature. It was rage-filled and written in almost like a manic state.
Mm-hmm.
Police were able to identify and locate the woman that the letter had been written to in London. She was a business executive, and turned out she and Elaine had been lovers and had lived together in the same house on and off from 1985 to 1990. In fact, the return visit to London that we talked about at the beginning was after Beverly's death. Elaine went back to London to see her lover. They ended up breaking up, and Elaine Parent came back to the United States. And as a side note, when Elaine Parent got back to the United States, she sent her former lover in London a note with letters cut out of the newspaper, sort of like a ransom note, informing her that she was going to kill her.
Oh, nice. Says she's stable.
Around this time, authorities lose track of Elaine because she was bouncing back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Changing names. And...
Mm-hmm. But it wouldn't be too long before she'd return, because she kind of bounces around, as we know. The investigation is now entering into its 12th year. 12 years of this, right? And the police are no closer to getting Elaine Parent as they were when they didn't have a name for her. In the spring of 2002, the TV series America's Most Wanted airs a story on the chameleon killer. It brings in a slew of new tips. And at this point, she was deemed, I believe it was, the world's most wanted woman because she was international. One of these tips that came in was from a caller claiming to know who this person was and that, in fact, they lived by her. It was a neighbor. They were claiming that they lived in a condo near Panama City, Florida. So police called the local authorities there and asked them to go just check it out, you know, because they're trying to follow up on every single lead. It's a bit after 3 a.m. when the Panama City police begin knocking on a door. An attractive middle-aged brunette answers the door. The police tell her that they're responding to her house in regards to a 911 call that was placed there. They use that as an excuse. The woman maintains it's not her. She did not call 911. So then they ask her for an ID. And she complies and hands the officers a military ID. Darlene Thompson is on the ID. Officers are confused as this photo looked nothing like the photo that they were presented with of Elaine Parent to make the ID visually. Mm-hmm. The officers apologize for the disturbance, but say that they're looking for someone and they needed to rule her out, you know, and just to make sure everything's okay. Would she go ahead and come down to the station with them? She's not happy at all.
Of course not.
Right? 3 a.m.? I wouldn't be either. She's not happy at all, but she agrees to go with them and ask if she can at least get dressed, get her purse, all her stuff
Fake
together.
IDs.
Yeah, all her IDs.
Certificates.
As she leaves the officers there standing at the front door.
Goes out the back bathroom.
One of the officers asked to see that military ID. Hey, let me see that ID. You see, he had just served in the military and hadn't been out too long before he ended up becoming a police officer. He examines the ID really close, and then he notices. He points out that the ID should have a stamp in it, mm-hmm. as so often the driver's license do, and it's not there. He thinks that the ID may be fake. Darlene Thompson. As the officers are standing there, realizing all this and thinking, oh no, this could be her.
Back door.
A shot rings out from inside the home.
Oh, took the other way out.
The officers rush in and find Darlene Thompson, aka Elaine Parent, in the floor, lying in a pool of blood from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. A search warrant of the condo reveals several photo IDs with different names with all her picture. Next to her computer, they find several passport applications with different names. Her computer is confiscated and is revealed to have software on it that allows regular people to make fake IDs. They open
regular people?
Non-criminal people, you know.
Non-government authority.
There you go. Yep.
People that aren't authorized to make IDs.
Yes. In her bedroom, she has lots and lots of wigs, different clothes, costumes, all that kind of stuff for all her alter personalities. Police now believe they have a good idea of how Elaine Parent operated. She would pick someone out that she believed she could get to know and use their weakness against them. That is, after all, what a good confidence person does, right? For Beverly McGowan, it was that she was single and needed a roommate. Perhaps she was a little lonely, so Elaine used that. But what Elaine didn't count on was that Beverly maybe wouldn't buy into all this. Authorities kind of think that Elaine Parent did the numerology routine with Beverly, but Beverly worked in a bank, remember? Mm-hmm. So she was a little bit more familiar with theft and fraud than, say, a layperson might be, right?
Right. Especially back then.
Police can only speculate as to what exactly happened since she killed herself and took all her secrets with her. But they guess that perhaps Beverly put up some sort of fight or the power shift changed. A weapon was pulled maybe to force her to write goodbye letters to her family because it did turn out that was her handwriting. So she mm-hmm. really did write that. Steve, her brother, had always said that some of the wording was off, like his sister wouldn't, you know.
There's words that she would have put in there that she normally wouldn't have used.
And just weird things, right?
And maybe that was her way to try to tell people.
That's exactly what he thought. Like there was the last sentence and just the way she said, bye, sis, your sis or something. And that wasn't a thing. You
right.
know what I mean? So he thought that maybe she was trying to tell him something.
Right.
Police also can only speculate as to what exactly happened that evening. But they believe that after Beverly put up some sort of fight, that a weapon was pulled on her. They think that Alice, aka Elaine, forced Beverly to drive to that spot where her body was found. And that an accomplice was there waiting. They believe her throat was slit and the pair cut off her head, hands, and tattoo. And tossed her body into that murky water where she was found later. Police seem to believe that she had to have an accomplice because of the strength that it would take to cut off somebody's hand through the bone mm-hmm. and cut off a neck. So they kind of think that it was a male accomplice.
Especially if it still had teeth, there would have to have been some kind of jaw. You would have to go through.
That'd be terrible.
I don't know.
Muscle and all that stuff. Oh. Due to the suicide of Elaine Parent, Beverly McGowan's case remains open. All of Elaine Parent's secrets died with her that day she killed herself. Authorities have been unable to tie her to other homicides, but believe that it probably is possible. That's it.
Oh, I would definitely think she had more people would have come forward with identity theft problems.
Well, you don't know, like, depending on how she did it. You know what I mean?
But you would think that she would have all that information still in her computer, too. Mm. But I don't know.
I don't know if you would, though, because you wouldn't want to be tied to it.
But even if you delete it, mm-hmm. It's still on your computer. But mm-hmm. I don't know how the computers were then in 92, if they would still have the memory that they had today.
I think they would, but I don't know. I don't know either.
Yeah, I would think she has a lot more crazy. Well,
that one
people.
Body that was found shot and the heads and hands removed
right.
in Sarasota. I mean, that's an unusual way to, you know what I mean? That's not for that same area nearby, but they couldn't connect it.
Right.
That's not to say that. And those are the bodies that were found. But could, the ones that aren't.
Okay, so, you know, the ME claims that she definitely died of a neck wound.
No, it was. Obviously. It wasn't. She didn't die from it. It contributed to her death.
I'm assuming, and I could be wrong, but I'm assuming they probably shot her first before decapitating her.
And that's the other thing, because of the head, they can't. And that's
tell.
Why he said that. I left right. that part out. But that
they
was
would,
part
should
of
have
it.
Had to have been like, because
they shot her in the head and then just took her out to do the, you know.
Because I could not imagine trying to decapitate somebody while they're still alive and fighting you. I mean, there's the videos that you see online.
There was something else that was just, and I left this part out. Jennifer, if I die, okay, and the police do an interview about me.
I'm going to say you lit up the room when you walked
no,
in.
No, this is even worse. I was like, this is horrible. So there was like a police lady or something, and they were saying that, you know, they at first they were trying to figure out why Beverly would be murdered because, you know, she wasn't rich. She wasn't that good looking. In fact, she wasn't that pretty at all. And I'm like, oh, my, seriously, that is terrible. Mm-hmm. Do not. Why would you say that? So say I was pretty.
I will,
okay.
But remember Ding Dong Dead when they
she
were describing.
She was 40 and even still pretty.
Yeah.
I am. I was just like, oh,
she was still pretty even though she was 40. No, I know.
She's already dead. Like, why do you have to say that? Just say she didn't.
She didn't fit normal.
She, yeah, and she didn't have a.
Profile.
She didn't have a lifestyle that would lead her
there
to be killed.
There are plenty of homely people that get killed. You know,
damn pretty.
Of course,
thanks.
I'll lie. Shame that woman, police officer. Shame on her for saying that.
And her brother Steve is like, I think he thinks that this would have been. Not knowing, and he canceled those cards, which
right.
they could have kept a track, like exactly
right.
where, she, and not letting her know.
But I would
that
have thought
that.
The exact same thing. I mean, if
because you don't think that your sibling has been brutally murdered.
I know.
Of course that doesn't. You're like, what the heck did they do now? Like, where are
right.
they? Or whatever.
Or
you know?
If I cancel her cards, she will have to call me for money.
Yes.
Or she will have to do something for money.
Yes.
So that was his thinking, I'm fairly certain. Whereas other examples mm-hmm. would be if you let it running, we would know where they were at.
Well, and I think too, if you think back to Charlotte Cowan, like, she gave her...
The real Charlotte Cowan.
The real one gave her
Elaine
the
pants.
Birth certificate.
And that's insane
it is
in
insane,
itself.
But you think about it. If she didn't, very well might have been murdered right then and there.
Exactly.
So maybe she did the right thing.
I don't know, but it would still...
Well, I just like that numerology. Let me have your social... Can I get your driver's license?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, and pull out your credit card, your best credit card. Give me that... Give me those numbers.
Well, you know, even if you do stuff on the computer now, like for insurance, mm-hmm. like my husband's the primary insurance guy, you have to give him their social security number. I don't know his social security number, so I'll always have to text him. And he'll text me part of it, and then he'll email me part of it. Like, he won't even put it on the same thing.
I'm just like, if anybody wants to be Cam, here you go. You can have it. My life is not that great. Trust me.
You can have all the debt.
All of it.
Yeah.
Take it all.
Exactly. Well, I wonder why we don't know anything about her past. Like,
because she was so,
find...
but there's very little because she was so, I mean,
yeah,
they,
but there has
she
to
was
be
from the Bronx.
Something. Other people in the Bronx might have,
but she could
have
disappeared at 18 too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but and then, somebody had to have known her and said, you know, she was a bit loony or in high school, she was kept to herself
know.
And we don't know what she did with those 50 gallon drums that she always kept in the basement, you know?
I don't know.
I mean, somebody has to know her. You just can't. Not be known.
Yeah, but you know, who you are at 18 versus who you are at 54, totally different.
True, but not that much different.
Yeah, it is when you are taking other people's identity and I'm South African. No, I'm British. No, I'm from Florida. No, I'm from, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right, you want to tell the good people where they can find us?
You can find us on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can go to our blog. I actually have it up to date as of right now. It is www.ourtruecrimepodcast.com. You can email us, as we're hoping HairCC will do, at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. And we would love it if you would leave us an iTunes review or, like we said earlier, any kind of review anywhere. Call us, email us, do whatever you need to do. Let us know. That you love us.
If
you
don't
love us.
Comments, like on cases and things, like things that we don't think about, I would love that. I'd love for you to put your two cents in and let us hear what
you think. Yeah, we are on Facebook. So we have an actual page, and then we have a discussion page where actually we don't really do a lot of discussions. It's fun talk right now.
This one of the posts had like 163 looks or mm-hmm. whatever. And not one person commented. And I'm like, let's talk, people. Let's talk.
And then if you want some of our merch, we have an Etsy store. It is etsy.com/ourtruecrimepodcast. We do have a Patreon, and you can find all that information, a donate button if you want to do just a one-time donation. Patreon does a monthly thing if you want. We have some awesome new limited edition Our True Crime Podcast koozies, which says, I am an OG of the OTCP, and you can only get them if you're through Patreon. But I think that's it.
We got one more thing.
Yeah.
This goes out to My Uterus Equals Nacho Business.
Ooh, yeah. I forget.
You ready?
Sing it to me.
You used to listen on my cell phone. You used to you. Late night when you need true crime. Yeah, I'm dancing. You always listened on my cell phone.
Chair dancing.
Late night when you need a pod fixed. It didn't rhyme. I couldn't think of anything. And you know when that phone ding. Ding, ding, ding. That can only mean one thing. Ding, 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 ding. A new episode of OTCP in the mix.
Wow. You know who sings that song?
Drake. Better than me. I know. Don't. That was,
anyway, that was
dedicated
fun.
To My Uterus Equals Nacho Business, because on Twitter, they wanted to hear it. So there you go.
Camille made a cute little, a funny Drake meme and posted it. And she just sang it for all you all.
And
all
Jennifer
y'all.
Has never heard that song. I had to play that for her.
I have never heard of that song.
Hotline. And the hotline bling.
Want to check us out?
I will. You ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
Remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Oh, bye-bye.
Love ya.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I'm fabtobulous.
You're fabtobulous?
Yeah.
Okay. That's new.
That was terrible.
Yeah, it was. Okay.
I told you I'm tired, man.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Wow, that was loud. Sorry, Sarah TC.
Sorry.
See,
Nico.
It was really loud.
Yeah.
And then I went really soft like that. So I apologize.
Yeah.
If that's what you're talking about, Hair CC, we'll change it.
Mm-hmm.
You do?
Mm-hmm, I do. Yep.
Did I hear that right?
You do.
I did.
Did. Done.
Do. The da-da-da is all I got to say to you.
Oh, Lord.
Do. The da-da-da. Okay, sorry.
Is that by Sean Cassidy? The do-run-run-run.
That's the do-run-run-run.
Do-run-run-run.
That was the Police, remember?
Oh, yeah. What's the do-run-run-run? Is that Sean
Met
Cassidy?
Met him on a Monday and my heart stood still. The do-run-run-run.
Sean Cassidy
run,
sang about a boy?
Well, that was a remake from a song from the 50s.
Okay, I got you. This was all for Nico's pleasure.
Love you, Nico. It's ribbed for your pleasure,
Nico. I was going to say that. Did you know that? That is exactly what I was thinking. I was not going
to
say it.
Okay. We love you, Nico. Oh, by the way, I still have the box. I'm going to try to get it out today or tomorrow. I waited.
Jennifer's going to send you her box.
I still got that. Not the cherry that it came in, but I still have the box. Anyway. sorry.
You're a pervert.
I know. Oops, sorry.
It's okay. I'm moving this too.
Just trying to get closer. Get a little closer.
Get a little bit closer.
Now don't be shy. You can get a little closer with Air It Extra Dry. Oh, remember that commercial?
Yes, I do. I'm like trying to keep my voice even, and that's not me.
Well,
so I'm just going back to me. I'm going back to me. I got to be me, Nico. I got to be me. She worked a part-time job as well as her full-time job, but it still wasn't enough to cut it.
Pompano.
What did I say? Pompano?
Mm-hmm.
That was terrible.
Pompano.
Okay, hold on. Sorry. Go back. She had bought a 2-bedroom condo near her brother, and it was located in Pompano. That's terrible. Pompano.
All right. Somebody I knew was asked if she had a tattoo, and she goes, "Would you spray paint the Taj Mahal?"
Taj Mahal is notoriously stinky on the inside because it's hot. So that's what I think of. Okay, sorry. Police need to find Alice as they have a few questions for her. But before they can do that, a tip comes in. Beverly's car.
Just the tip.
Even though it will take years to do it, Nora Pfeiffer is ready and willing. She would be the one person who would never give up on this case.
Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down. Never gonna turn around and desert you.
Okay.
Cut your head off.
What's that? I was trying to think of that joke. What's the, what does a lesbian bring on their second date at U-Haul?
A U-Haul? Yeah.
In 1998, a postcard came into the sheriff's department. It was signed, Best Wishes. I want to say breast. Breast wishes.
In October, we can.